Hello, and welcome to the Equalizer podcast. I'm your host, Ariana Cascone, and I'm here today with our very own Jeff Kasouf. How are you today, Jeff?
I'm great. Thank you. Good to chat again.
Yes, always good to chat. So we are halfway through the NWSO regular season, which I'm still trying to wrap my head around. And today we'll take some time to dive into the two big victories from the weekend in the first half of the episode. And then in the back half, we'll talk about some of the biggest surprises and standouts through these first 11 games. So how does that sound?
Sounds great. Halfway. Yeah. I mean, I keep saying this. It's the World Cup bearing down on us halfway through the season. It's funny because last year, this time with the ridiculous setup of the Challenge Cup, this was like, you know, week four of the actual regular season. Right. So I think this is better. It's just, yeah, it's kind of daunting to be halfway already and feel like, you know, I mean, your mind just doesn't always process that at this point.
Yeah. And it's actually, since you mentioned that, it made me think of this idea that every team has played the same amount of games. So it's really nice not to have to do that mental math for who has games in hand and who is, you know, thinking about points per game or whatever it is, right? Everyone's at 11. So it's cool to take stock of the table at this point and, you know, think about how things might translate when we get to the end.
Yeah. First that I can remember it ever being the case at the halfway point anyway. I mean, maybe it happened, but in terms of like the consistency of this, basically, I mean, a game here or there that was a little bit off, but we've basically had everybody playing every round, you know, and not this kind of ridiculous. I mean, in years past, we had an odd number of teams sometimes, great, you know, all that. But like last year is the example, right? Like these games were a little bit all over the map with midweek games and everything. And it's nice. Yeah, it's nice to be able to look at the table and not have to say, oh, you know, somebody's got three games in hand. It was North Carolina last year, right? That was playing catch up between rescheduled games. I mean, there were so many games in hand that it was this constant conversation of, well, they don't look great, but you know, they've got so many games in hand, maybe they make it up at the end of the year. And now, you know, you're right. We're looking at this, and obviously everybody hasn't played everybody the same amount of times, but you know, we've got 11 each for everybody. And you know, there's no caveat in that sense.
Yeah, it's been really nice to interpret results in that way. So before we get into some of our, you know, diving into games, we'll just do our usual rundown of results. So Racing Louisville and the San Diego Wave played to a 0-0 draw on Friday, and then Washington Spirit downed Angel City 2-1. So Angel City are winless through several games in all competitions. They've had one win in 12 matches in all competitions so far. So not great for Angel City. North Carolina beat Chicago by a 5-0 scoreline. And, you know, that's an obvious one. We're going to dive into that one a little bit more today. OL Reign beat the Current 2-1. Houston and Gotham played to another draw 1-1 yesterday. And Orlando and Portland rounded out the weekend with another game that we'll focus on, right, with Portland falling to Orlando on the road by a 3-1 scoreline. So which one should we dive into first, Jeff? North Carolina, Chicago, or Orlando, Portland?
Yeah, I mean, I think Orlando Portland is probably the, you know, the surprising one at a glance, right? You know, certainly 5-0 is a surprising scoreline. I think the result itself is not necessarily all that shocking, you know, in Chicago over the weekend. But, you know, Orlando, I mean, we talked about this a little bit last week. I mean, I mentioned in the second pod last week, building up to the weekend, about Orlando being better than, you know, a little bit better than their record, certainly better than last year. They've done some really nice things in terms of how they've been able to build their attack in possession, which I don't think we've really ever seen on a consistent basis in any iteration of this team since it became a franchise. So, you know, this year has been encouraging for them. I mean, I realize obviously they're still not even in playoff position, and you know, we're not, I don't mean to talk about them as if they're chasing the shield here, but you know, it is tangible progress, right? It is not just in the results, which I think this result, which, you know, good on them. I mean, they celebrated this like they won a cup final, right? I mean, Adriana's getting tossed up in the air from a mob of teammates, like, you know, like she's raising the cup, and it's a big result. They hadn't beaten Portland in years. They obviously opened the season in Portland, lost 4-0. You know, they got trounced last year in the same fixture. So I think you can see this as a reward and a sign, like a very tangible sign of that progress. And, you know, they've figured out, frankly, I mean, a roster that I think most people had low expectations for in year one, maybe as a long build. Again, it's halfway, so things could still change, right? But I think that result, you know, it's one of those things I like to say, like from a coverage standpoint, like we like to get ahead of stories, right? And make sure that you as our listener or reader knows what's happening before it's in vogue and we're really sort of hammering in and analyzing and we've done that, right? And I think this result is the type of thing that gets the casual person or the sort of casual onlooker paying attention. Oh, what's up with that? What happened here? How could Orlando beat Portland, right? Well, yes, shocking on that level of, like, you know, historical or recency bias of the Pride haven't been any good. Orlando has been a steamroller, you know, on form this year and recently, past month or so, with some of the ups and downs the Thorns have had. You know, Orlando's picked up some nice results, done some interesting things within games. It's not that surprising. And I think it's obviously a big result. And now we see, you know, I think with both of these games that we'll drill down on, what does this mean going forward? Because this should be a catalyst for these teams for the second half of the season.
Yeah. And thinking about Orlando's progress year over year, of course, they're having a better season this year compared to last year. Right. And I think there's even progress, like slow progress from the beginning, which, you know, they opened their season against Portland, like you said, but they have honestly been better and better every single game. And I know that, you know, they went on that short unbeaten streak that was ultimately snapped by Chicago of all teams. But even if you think of that loss to Chicago, Chicago did not register any shots on goal. I'm pretty sure after they scored, I remember seeing their expected goals race plot and it was just totally plateaued. And Orlando, you know, they were just very unlucky, honestly, to lose that game. It felt like at any point they were going to equalize or win. And, you know, then, oh, go ahead.
No, I mean, I mentioned that last week. I was going to say, yeah, I think it's even in that loss, which was, you know, probably not great if you look at the standings, right? But it was, you know, they were very good everywhere except in front of net, basically, is what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. And then, you know, think about yesterday. And I think for large stretches of this game, Orlando just looked like the better team. And you know, I've spoken a lot about Portland's attack. And I think a lot of the focus was on their defense yesterday because of how poor it was. And I don't say that to take away from, you know, what Orlando is able to produce. But when I was thinking back on this game, I asked, was it that Portland was really bad or Orlando was really good? And I think it was maybe a mixture of both happening at the same time. You know, if you think about that third goal that Orlando scored, they're already winning 2-1. It was a really bad pass backward that Messiah Bright just happened to pick off. And I think that sense of urgency was like pretty late in the game, 60-something minute, for Messiah Bright when she's already ahead to pick off that pass and then score the goal is sort of like Orlando making a statement in a way against a Portland team, that it's something to watch. I think what this idea of a catalyst is interesting because maybe it will spur Orlando into, you know, reaching this level that they reached against Portland, you know, in their next stretch of games.
Yeah. I mean, I think playoffs are look, I mean, it's a forgiving league. It's not, I mean, I hope we never go the way of where we are with MLS now with how useless the regular season seems to be there. But, you know, 6 out of 12 teams at the moment anyway, making the playoffs. I will insert my campaign again. Do not expand this when we go to 14 or 16 teams. 6 is great. But, you know, 6 out of 12 making the playoffs. If you're not making the playoffs as a baseline in this league, as a baseline benchmark, you have a problem, right? And you have to reassess what's happened in a given season. I say that inherently knowing the parity in this league, knowing how difficult it is, obviously. But that's the also the very reason that you need to be in the mix. So, you know, when a team is consistently out of it, which Orlando has been in, you know, almost every single year they've existed, you know, you have to ask questions. And I think, you know, credit to Seb Hines, who essentially, I mean, it's almost the second full year in charge, but only the first in which, you know, the interim tag isn't there. Obviously the roster's changed a lot. Haley Carter's come in as GM, you know, and young talent. They've lost a lot of the big names over the past year, year and a half. And, you know, this is, you know, like we said, I think one that was going to be for the future, I think still is a long-term build. It's not going to be immediate, but yeah, I think, you know, especially the way this season is playing out with some of the struggles of some other teams, you know, I feel like if you're Orlando, you want to be in that top six. And I think if you get there come October, you have to view that as really significant. Maybe this wouldn't be internally viewed as ahead of schedule, but I think externally it'd be viewed as ahead of schedule and it would be significant.
Yeah. And thinking about the playoff line, I mean, yes, you know, half of this innings make the playoffs, but they are separated by 3 points right now, which is a little bit wild. I mean, it's always been tight, like you said, the parity of this league, but 3 points separating six teams is something.
Yeah, 4 points from first to missing the playoffs right now, which is something.
Yeah. So, you know, we're talking about Orlando being on the up, essentially. And so I think it's a good time to transition into talking about the Courage and their game against Chicago. So, you know, they beat Chicago by a 5-0 scoreline, right? What can we make of this game for North Carolina?
Well, look, I mean, Caroline Hattrick, you know, I think we knew she's an exceptional player. This is a team that lost, as we've talked about, Dabinia and Deanna Ordonez, and that really put significant focal point on Caro, right? So, you know, I think that that's a burden to a degree. You know, I think Sean Nahas spoke about that a little bit post-game in terms of, you know, the pressure, right? And what that means, and she's best sort of playing freely. Obviously we saw that on Saturday and, you know, she's an exceptional player. I mean, there's a reason that it was only last week, beginning of last week, that we saw the reports out of Brazil about interest abroad in her. So, you know, I think that she's obviously a focal point, right? And there's more to it than that. I mean, I did see, I usually do like to look for these things, you know, or hit the rewind button when Paramount or other services allow it. But the 34 pass buildup, sorry, do I have the number wrong? 34? No. 25 pass buildup? 25 pass buildup, 34th minute for Caroline. 25 pass buildup to that goal, her second tally, was, according to Opta, the longest buildup for a goal since 2016. And I love a good team goal. But that does speak to, I think, you know, obviously, the Courage in possession, which, you know, you've talked about this, you've written about it, you know, a little bit different or very different from the Courage that, you know, again, if we're kind of trying to remove recency bias, people, I think, see Courage and they think, you know, the days of McDonald and Williams and Dunn in midfield, and they press the heck out of you and, you know, they transition. But, you know, this is a very different, certainly very different personnel and a different approach and style too. So, you know, again, I think a catalyst to the rest of the season type of result, or at least that's what you have to try to make it. But, you know, I think it's tough. I mean, again, like you said, with Orlando, I mean, I take nothing away from what the Courage did. Chicago, even with having, you know, coming off of the result in LA on Monday, you know, obviously there's a lot going on there. And I think, you know, we've talked about this in different iterations over the past couple of years, unfortunately, and different, this has meant different things in terms of what's going on there, but the team for sale and the uncertainty and, you know, even, I mean, trickling into this year, as we've talked about with, you know, GM getting fired and why that was. And I mean, I think that you add that, compound it with what's struggles on the field, which, you know, those are, in part due to the mass exodus of players because of everything that happened off the field, right? And I think it's a really tough proposition to have high morale right now there. So I think that's, you know, it's worthwhile context to a result like this at a minimum. But you know, take nothing away from the Courage were clinical. I mean, I think that, you know, a couple of these goals at minimum were world class.
Yeah, you know, mentioning the context is definitely important here. I think we just, like you say, we don't want to take anything away from the Courage. That's all. But, you know, I have, not to be a downer by any means, but I do have some concern, is probably too strong of a word, that this is like a pace to keep up with, I guess. You know, the Courage came into this game, averaging something like a goal per game. And then, you know, the floodgates kind of break through, they score five. And, you know, this team, if for last season, right, they were a team that were, that was scoring two, three goals pretty regularly. They were averaging the second best goals per game in the league behind Portland last season. And it hasn't been the case this season. I think their style of play has been a lot of building up in possession. And it seems like once they get to the final third, the execution is, has been really lacking, just to be frank. And, you know, I have written about this and that they kind of are in need of a true number nine. And so to see some of these really amazing team goals on Saturday, it was almost like, well, where did these come from? Because they have struggled so much in the attacking third with finishing and with, you know, finding that final pass. So I guess I'm just curious to see, you know, if the Courage can sustain a multi-goal per game pace. Thinking about their opponent, I think at times Chicago did make it really easy. I mean, the goal that Mila Guile scored in particular, right? She needed one touch to beat and essentially the entire back line who were all in the box. And, you know, really great, great touch. There's, you know, no other way to say that. And it's a great goal, but against a defense that is a little bit more organized or, you know, a team that has a better set of defensive tactics. I just don't know that some of these really translate into, you know, the screamers that happened for North Carolina.
You know, I thought that Guile goal, you know, exceptional first touch. I've got to fully go with credit to her. I mean, you know, the one maybe that concerned me from a Chicago standpoint, I think it's the one I sent you a screen grab of in our Slack of the, you know, that was it the second Caro goal? I think it was the second one where, and now we see, you know, from the chart that Opta sent where, you know, obviously the 25 pass buildup, but that's where she's in behind. Sorry, that was the third one. One of those from Caroline.
Too many to keep track of.
Yeah. She ends up essentially 1v1 because just about everybody is just marking dead space from Chicago, and they're doing it at the midfield line, mm-hmm. right? They're doing it at midfield. So it's one bad step for the pressure. The cover's late. There's no balance, right? So that was the one I was more concerned there than I was with the goal that you referenced that I think was, you know, full credit to, you know, an exceptional first touch and finish. But mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, I think that the overall point there is it remains. And, you know, I mean, we're talking about catalyst, and I've been saying this, I've written it, you know, this is a stretch for North Carolina in particular. And it started, to your point, with a 1-0 loss to Kansas City where they only had one shot on goal a week before this, right? So this is a particular stretch where, you know, it's extremely important that they pick up maximum points. I mean, I don't expect them to win every game in this league, as we talked about parity, but, you know, you had the Kansas City game followed by Chicago. Very interested in the coming weekend because we're talking about these two teams right now. It's North Carolina versus Orlando. I think that'll be... maybe, you know, we've got Angel City, San Diego this weekend too, but, you know, North Carolina, Orlando is one to watch. And then after that, you know, the Courage, it's racing Louisville again. You know, they come back and they've got Houston. You know, it's a stretch where Angel City in July, like they don't play. And then the Challenge Cup. So until the Thorns game in Portland in August, like, and again, that's a winnable game, obviously, but like it's a very favorable schedule. So you have to be picking up points right now. And obviously they did that emphatically in Chicago, which was, you know, a necessity. And I'm really interested to see how Courage Pride plays out this weekend.
Yeah, I am too. And you know, one more thing about the Courage is that there were three changes to their lineup on that came out against Chicago. And so Mila Guile was one of them and Tess Bodie was the other. And both of those players found themselves on the score sheet, right? So Guile scored and assisted, and then Tess Bodie assisted one of Caroline's goals. And so I think, you know, I just finished saying that North Carolina's attack was struggling, but it is a positive sign to see these players that didn't have starting roles come into the starting lineup and make really tangible contributions. So I'm interested, you know, for the reasons that you said, and then also for this sort of this rotation that that really worked for the Courage against Chicago. I'm interested to see how they'll come out against Orlando next week. So that feels like a good place to take a break. And when we get back, we'll talk about surprises and standouts from the first half of the season. Okay, and we're back to talk about some more NWSL fun here. So, Jeff, why don't you tee us off here?
Throw it at me. Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the halfway point, you know, it's a rarity, like you said, of what is to have, you know, every team on 11 games played in a way that we don't really get in this league typically. And hopefully that we get it against, you know, every year from here on out. But yeah, I think it's a good one to sort of give us this, you know, whether arbitrary or not, you know, this nice sort of where are we at debrief. And I think it'd be interesting just to kind of look at, you know, I guess you've given me the host seat here, so I want to just ask you first, you know, what, I mean, we can talk about like surprises of the season so far and maybe, you know, surprise and standout. And I don't know. I mean, I think I look at some of these things and there are certainly surprises at, you know, bottom of the table, literally, I guess. And then, you know, toward the top of the table, but I'm curious kind of what is, if you had one topic or team or whatever it might be of a surprise for this year so far, what do you think it would be?
Yeah. So if I had to pick, you know, something that stood out to me now, it would be Houston's lack of production in the final third. So, you know, right now they've scored 10 goals and that's actually the fewest in the league, tied with Orlando. And coming into the season, having acquired Deanna Ordonez, you know, adding her to the ranks with Maria Sanchez and Ebony Salmon, I guess I just didn't expect this team to really struggle to find the back of the net.
Yeah, I didn't either. I mean, obviously, you know, they're not alone in that category either, right? In terms of teams that maybe have struggled. But yeah, I think that, you know, the margins have been really fine here. You know, obviously, we've seen a little bit of a, I think, one to watch there, that Ebony Salmon, sort of how she's been used lately. You know, Ordonez, obviously, you know, I know that this is what we've had. Is it three different coaches now that have used Maria Sanchez as sort of a wingback at times? I don't love it given her, you know, strongest skill set, but I get it. And it, obviously it has worked, you know, relatively well at times. But yeah, I think if you want to look at, you know, a team that has the talent, maybe should be doing better, you know, and frankly needs to score a bit more. Because I think that they've, and I think the expected goal supports this, that they've gotten lucky at times with not conceding more. Certainly there's specific games that come to mind, like the one in Portland, among others, that, you know, I think that they are going to need to start finding the back of the net in the event that there is any sort of regression of the mean on the defensive end. So, yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there was a point during the season, I think it might have been when they beat the Thorns, that Ebony Salmon sort of overcame her goal drought. I think it was the longest of her career. Theo Lloyd Hughes posted about this. And, you know, I'm not, has she scored since then? Off the top of my head, I don't think so. But it's kind of interesting. It's almost like there's an individual underperformance in the attack that, I've talked about this before, right? The overperformance of Deanna Ordonez and Ebony Salmon in particular of their expected goals last year carried their teams to some degree. And those underperformances are now really hurting their team.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. You know, I would say too, maybe on the surprise front, like, you know, from a, I think you could have this conversation with a few different teams, right? We've talked about Kansas City extensively. You know, we've talked about Chicago's defensive struggles, not and I think on the offensive end, obviously losing Mallory Swanson was, you know, a game changer in a terrible way for her, obviously, for the U.S. national team and for Chicago, that very much just relied on her in the attacking third. But, you know, I think from a, you know, if you move up the table a little bit, I think the Spirit coming together as quickly as they did or have is, you know, they're joint top with San Diego on 20 points. They've got their goal difference is one worse, so they're, you know, they're technically in second. You know, I think maybe that's a product of Mark Parsons sort of trying to temper expectations a bit in preseason and telling everybody they'd need 10 games or so to be at their best, and maybe they, you know, again, got there a little bit faster than expected. I do, you know, I think a story to watch there on an individual level, like they've done that with, you know, we talk about Sam Staub being, you know, the record breaker for consecutive starts. You know, I think you look at that and she's next to Tara McKeown, who's come over as a center forward, basically turned center back and done very well. Like I actually, there were moments in Washington's 2-1 win over Angel City on the weekend that, you know, she's standing up Alyssa Thompson 1v1, and you know, Thompson's obviously 18 and has, you know, progress to go and experience, but a very talented player, especially 1v1 already, as we've seen. And I thought she handled that really well defensively. So I think that jumps out. And then from a team level, I mean, look, Gotham, I mean, last place, I'm not even being critical to say they were abysmal last year, right? Like, I mean, 12 straight losses. I mean, it was bad. They were bottom of the table. So I think that obviously set some very low expectations. You know, Lynn Williams is a talent that I have been on the hype train for a long time, and I think was an exceptional acquisition. Outside of that, I wasn't like thrilled with the offseason beyond that they had, and it was followed up by, you know, it was not a very good offseason, the one prior. So I don't know that the expectations were super high, but I mean, obviously they entered, you know, they were top of the table only a week ago, right? And then, you know, they're still only 2 points off the pace and could have gone back to joint top on points with, you know, things breaking a little bit differently in Houston, right? So I think, you know, that's probably my surprise team, even though they're fifth, you know, being 2 points off the pace. I think we look at some of these teams that are, you know, subjectively, I guess, but you know, a few of these teams are out of the playoff picture, it feels like, right? I mean, mathematically, no, but and yes, this is the league of parity, things happen, but like, you know, I look at a couple of these teams toward the bottom and it's just, you know, the path forward is extremely grim, right? So that Gotham is not in that picture is progress, as we talked about with Orlando, and I think, you know, frankly, a bit surprising in a good way.
Yeah, Gotham is a really good shout here, I think. You know, I too have been on the Lynn Williams hype train, and I guess I did not expect her to almost single-handedly bring this team to the top. That, of course, is a little bit of an overstatement, but, you know, she has been really great on both sides of the ball for them. And so, you know, thinking about Gotham's rise, it will be really interesting to see what happens during the World Cup. When Lynn Williams is not there to save the day repeatedly. I know the same can be said for several other teams, but it does feel like, in a way, you know, Lynn Williams has been the lifeline for this Gotham team.
Yeah. And I mean, I know we wanted to talk about sort of standouts. I mean, you know, so far, and I thought, you know, Williams is one for me. I mean, if I'm thinking about, I've tried to think about again with this sort of this exact break we have of halfway and everybody's played an even number of games, and you know, I've been trying to think about like who, if I had to vote today, and thankfully, you know, I don't, who would be an MVP. And I mean, look, maybe I get caught up in my head a little bit on these things sometimes with it's sort of the, you know, like last year, you know, the MVP vote, is it a best player vote or is it a, you know, do you really value that V piece of it? And what is that player's value to their team? And, you know, I think that as nuanced as that is, as maybe it's semantics, like it does change the framing a little bit, right? And last year you could look at that. I mean, we just talked about Swanson missing from Chicago. I mean, the value of Mallory Swanson to Chicago, you know, we had to speak about it hypothetically last year. What if you removed her? What are the red stars? Now we're looking at it literally, and that's not the entirety of explanation of their struggles. But, you know, there's an answer that maybe nobody wanted to see, right? So I think that's part of that, the conversation in the MVP. And, you know, I think in that framing, I would put Williams right up there. You know, maybe off the cuff, I'd even say I might vote for her in that sense. You know, obviously the Golden Boot race is a major one, and it's a bit of a jockeying. It changed hands twice over the weekend with Hatch taking over, breaking the tie. Then Caroline scores the hat trick and takes over. So, you know, I don't like defaulting to Golden Boot winner wins MVP. I actually hate it. I hate it as much as here it is a World Cup year where somebody's going to win the Golden Boot, the Golden Ball at the World Cup, and probably also be named Player of the Year, you know, for the entirety of the year, even though it's supposed to be a full body of work. So I don't want to default to that, but I think that's obviously, you know, a good shout is anybody in that mix currently for different reasons. And again, I mean, I think what are the spirit, if you take away what Hatch has done, I know there's some PK goals there, but, you know, I won't take yours because I think those are the obvious ones. And then, you know, one that is maybe a little less obvious statistically, or at least from a goal scoring perspective, right, is maybe who I think you were saying offline might be your choice. I don't know if you said, I don't want to put words in your mouth that you'd vote MVP here, but.
Are we talking about Savannah DeMello?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I think, you know, when it's interesting to hear your sort of internal monologue about MVP discussions, because
my internal monologue, there's too many of those, so don't worry.
Well, it really resonates with me because I think of that MVP award not entirely as like the best player, but I really do value the, you know, the V part of that award. And it's like, what happens when you take them away from their team? And I think in that context, Savannah DeMello is almost a no brainer for me. When she was suspended with red card in one of Louisville's early games, the team just looked way different and different bad, just to be clear on that one. And I think, you know, without DeMello, Racing's identity is sort of up in the air. I think that she's the engine of this team. And, you know, I think Jalen Howell's having a really great season too, better than her rookie season, excuse me. And, you know, it's been really fun to see the two of them sort of help this Louisville team this season. I will say it's kind of interesting that they aren't better than they are right now. I think, you know, Becky Morgan put out something along the lines of Racing being only a point better this season than they were at this point last season. And, you know, that is surprising to me. I was kind of high on Louisville coming into the season because I knew that DeMello I knew she was great last season and I thought she would be better this season. Same thing for Howell. And you know, those two players have been, but the team as a whole has been a little bit underwhelming, I guess, in the context of all the other things I just said.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, in that sort of what happens if you remove them situation or context and framing, like, I mean, you could maybe, I mean, we just talked about North Carolina and Caroline and, you know, I think she probably fits both categories, right? I mean, she is the current Golden Boot leader. Also, what happens if you remove her from North Carolina? So, you know, and then I think the one that I will sort of continue to watch, I mean, I thought, I've said this, first month of the season, I thought Jaden Shaw was the best player in the league, 18 years old or not. And then, you know, there was that spirit game where the wave were in Washington on national TV. Spirit masterfully marked her right out of the game in that diamond midfield that they play. And she was off at halftime. And then since then, she's sort of been in and out of the lineup. And I did ask Casey Stoney about this in person at Red Bull Arena last week. And she said it's a bit more of a management thing. She's 18, you know, Challenge Cup games midweek, don't want to run her into the ground. And, you know, and she's come off the bench. I mean, at that game, obviously, she comes off the bench along with Mackenzie Doniak and 48 seconds in, the two combined for a goal and a spectacular world-class through ball from Jaden Shaw, which is really her, you know, among many traits, her best one. So, you know, I don't think, I mean, an MVP has got to be a starter for a team. Right. And I mean, mm-hmm. Shaw is a starter in general. And so I'm just kind of, I guess, curious to monitor that. But I mean, you look at sort of top of the table and I mean, obviously Alex Morgan did a lot of the the carrying of this team in many ways last year. And you know, Naomi Girma, I think, was, you know, exceptional, obviously a finalist for MVP as a rookie. And again, I'm very much on the Girma hype train and have been for a while. But, you know, I think Jaden Shaw, assuming San Diego maintains this kind of point production, I don't want to say form, because I think you were sort of crunching some of the data and wondering, you know, if they have gotten lucky a bit at times. But, you know, I think Shaw is one to watch. I just want to see that, you know, granted she's 18. I say that, you know, I want to see that consistency and see where that goes.
Yeah, I think these are good things to keep in mind as we approach the back half of the season. And, you know, maybe we'll revisit this conversation in October and see if our midseason MVPs were close to the full season MVPs.
Announcer's jinx is on.
True. Okay, so thank you so much, Jeff, for joining me. It's always a pleasure to chat. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. And thanks to Jacqueline Purdy, our producer. I'm Ariana Cascone, and we'll be back with more soon on the Equalizer podcast. We'll be right back.